Right, we're underground, effectively. We're in the cellar of Bremont, the boutique, in Mayfair. And I'm lucky enough to have grabbed a few moments before his talk with Mr. Ben Saunders. You may have known him to be, I think, the third person who walked
solo to
the North Pole. But recently, something quite incredible. Recently, you followed literally in the footsteps of Scott, and you completed, unfortunately, what he didn't manage to.
Mm-hmm. We did, yes, yeah. There were two of us, my teammate Tarka and I, old buddy mine, and it was a project that I've been dreaming of having a go at for a long, long time, probably most of my adult life, really. So the culmination of more than 10 years' work, hard graft, a lot of fundraising, a lot of training, a lot of preparation, and... Was coming downstairs.
Yeah, we're in the corridor with the noisiest shoes we'll always be passing. So tell me a little bit. Some people compare the environment that you were in to like cave diving. Mm. You only have to make the tiniest of mistake and it's death. Is that true?
Yes, it is really. It's a very big place. I think there's kind of misconception that A, that it's all been done before, and B, that Antarctica is sort of fast becoming the next luxury tourist destination. And the fact is, yes, there are cruise ships going around to a few little dots around the coast, but for the most part, it is a giant and genuine wilderness. It's a vast continent, twice the size of Australia, coldest, windiest, driest, highest altitude place on Earth. And for most of the nearly 4 months we were down there, we were a long way from anywhere, a long way from anyone, and with a lot of scope things went wrong to get into pretty serious trouble.
Tell me briefly about the technology that effectively helped you stay alive, and what could you have done if things hit the fan? I mean, how long for a rescue to reach you could they? Mm.
We were, I would say, probably the highest tech expedition ever to set foot in Antarctica. We had a partnership with Intel. Intel and Land Rover were the two big partners of the expedition. And with the help of Intel, we put together a completely custom-made satellite transmitter so we could upload significant amounts of data to the Iridium networks. There's only one satellite phone network that covers the pole. It's called Iridium. And it's good for phone calls, but it's useless for sending data. So we had to hack it a little bit and produce this big transmitter that sat in the back of one of the sledges. So we were able to tell the story in real time, to send back photographs and film and text, blogs, that kind of thing. But we also had, a safety net that didn't exist for Captain Scott. We had 24/7 a satellite tracker in the back of the other sledge that was following our position. So the support team back home, people following the website, knew where we were the whole time. Having said that, if the weather's bad, if we get in trouble, if it's bad weather, it could be a few days before a plane might be able to land somewhere near us. We travelled up and down one of the largest and most dangerous glaciers in the world, the Bullmore Glacier. And most of it is what's called blue ice, so very hard ice, sheer ice surface, heavily crevassed. There's no way you can land a plane on it. So for the riskiest part of the journey, we were completely unable to be picked up. So there was still some hairy parts to it.
When it comes to the sharing of content, what kind of bandwidth did you have? And did you find the thinking about what to share and when comforting because it's something to think about, or getting in the way of your safety thoughts?
Yeah. I really enjoyed the fact that we were able to sort of tell the stories unfolded. As a kid, I was always inspired by reading about explorers, Scott and Amundsen and Shackleton and Nance and all these incredible characters from that sort of Edwardian golden age. So for me, it was always really important that we kind of write the diary and share the diary as it was happening. And I realised early on that people would only really respond to it if it was genuine and honest and open. And most people don't have any reference points. They don't know what it feels like to experience minus 55 degrees C wind chill. They don't know what it feels like to pull a sledge that weighs 200 kilos. But they know what it's like to face challenges. They know what it's like to feel scared. They know what it's like to feel lonely or homesick. So I found actually it worked best when I just treated it like a diary. And it became my diary for the whole trip. So we had a huge following online. The bandwidth, I can't actually remember. The biggest file we sent back was about 8.5 megabytes. It was a video.
Wow.
And it took I think about 40 minutes, 45 minutes or so.
Good job, you had sponsored data. That's amazing.
Yes, yeah.
So you had a micro transponder. I think I saw a picture of that, which has a battery life of 2 months. Which
yes, incredible. It's made by a company called NAL, N-A-L. Shout Nano was the little tracker. That uses the Iridium network as well. And then the big transmitter was based on Iridium have a solution called, used to be called OpenPort, it's now called Pilot, which is designed for boats or ships. And it's normally a sort of big mushroom-shaped antenna that you see on the bridge of a yacht or an oil tanker or something like that, and we've been trying for years to find out what's inside this big dome-shaped bit of metal, and can we take all that gubbins out and put it in something a bit smaller, a bit lighter, and power it all with lithium-ion batteries and a solar panel. And it took a bit of doing, but essentially we that's what we did. So it's basically 8 Iridium antennas all running at the same time, so all uploading at the same time.
Wow. So the solar panel was enough? I mean, do you remember
yes,
how many
yeah, we
watts?
Had, we had two 30-watt panels, so we had about 60 watts altogether, and we had 4 little lithium, actually the lithium polymer battery packs. We found a company in China that was making them, you know, cutting edge.
Wow.
And I think each one's 50, each battery pack's sort of 55... watts, I forget, I'm not really going to watts and volts and watt hours and amp hours and all that stuff, but they were fantastic, really, 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 and yeah, we powered everything from solar panels. So.
I'm trying to picture if I can get this all on the back of a bike.
Yeah. Well, I think you almost could. I mean, the technology's come on so far and so fast in the 12 years I've been in the expedition. We've gone from my first trip in 2001 having HF radio, massive lead acid battery pack, you know, and almost no reception, to nowadays having flexible solar panels, a laptop in the tent.
How do you think you would have felt if you'd had this technology on your solo trips? Do you think it would have eradicated a lot of the loneliness?
I realised on that big solo trip, there's a big difference between being lonely and being alone. I don't think I ever really did feel lonely on that trip. I knew there were so many people following me, so many people that cared about me, and so many people who were sort of tuned into to hearing how I'd done every day. And I kind of squared it with myself by saying, well, there are lonelier people on the streets of London, you know. Who no one really cares about. So that's the way I sort of dealt with that side of things. It was still, I think, the sense of physical isolation was at times really overwhelming. And much the same in Antarctica, you know, it's a giant place, and you'd be forgiven for thinking it's sort of overrun with tourists and royal family and all that sort of thing. But actually, it's not at all. Big place, and a genuine wilderness. I mean, for much of the journey, we might as well have been on a different planet. There's nothing living in the interior of Antarctica at all. The only wildlife, the only bird life, the only plants, the only bacteria is around the coast. The central bit of Antarctica, which is massive, size of China and India put together, is lifeless. So it's an extraordinary place.
Yeah. You know, not wanting to trivialise the size of the world and how many adventures are left. You've ticked off the poles. And what's next? I mean, outer space?
I would love that, yeah. We'll see. Watch this space. We're looking at doing something interesting actually in Europe next year, involving quite a lot of mountains in quite a short space of time. So that would be a fun road trip. Beyond that, who knows? Antarctica, I mean... In some ways, it was the toughest 4 months of my entire life, the most traumatic 4 months of my life. But in other ways, I just fell in love with it. It's a stunning place. It's so hard to put the scale of it into words, really. Beautiful place. It is still littered with unclimbed mountains. It's there's a lot of genuine exploration to be had down there. So I'm sure that won't be my last trip to Antarctica. I at the moment, I'm having a bit of a Steve Redgrave moment, and I don't want to see a sledge harness again anytime soon. But I think I've got much left to prove in the blisters and chafing department. But it's a stunning place, and I'll definitely be back there for sure.
Well, I think you deserve a rest, definitely, at least for a bit. Well, we're here in the basement of one of your sponsors, Bremont, for the trip, and I want to thank them very much for inviting me along and getting the chance to talk to you. You are about to talk to everybody in a few moments.
Indeed,
where can people find you online?
BenSaunders.com. I am on Twitter, PolarBen, and it was also the last project was called the Scott Expedition, so ScottExpedition.com, Scott Expedition on Facebook, Twitter, Google+, all those things.
Thank you very much for the inspiration.
Pleasure. Thank you.